Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by Michael Joseph and Daniel Mentz of Sacred Honor Educational Fellowship. And I was a little bit nervous about this conversation because Daniel and Michael are helping to teach us all about self-governance and law. And while I recognize the value and importance of learning these things, on a personal note, my studies in these realms have historically tended to generate some anxiety, some fear, some pressure. This conversation was the absolute opposite. It felt really empowering, and it also felt like this is a pathway. I'm just speaking for myself because I recognize that we're all wired totally differently. And in speaking to Daniel and Michael, it feels to me like this is the type of kind of compassionate, gentle pathway into self-governance and lawful mastery that will likely be the most aligned for me with my personal wiring. Regardless, I know that there's going to be a ton of value in this conversation for you guys. Michael and Daniel have so much knowledge in the realms of self-governance. I love the way that they are breaking down their educational programming. It just feels very accessible the way that they're doing it. I loved this conversation. I trust that you will as well. Before we dive in, I am inviting you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to definitely leave this podcast a review. And while you are in your reviewing paradigm, head on over to Amazon and go ahead and review any and all of my books that you have read. Also inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. Just poking myself, poking my name. It's the very best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch and that you get to stay abreast of my every next course, webinar, book drop, live event, special collaboration, special discounts on things like the very courses we're sharing with you today. Lastly, I am absolutely supporting people in moving through these self-governing educational programs that Michael and Daniel and their partners are sharing with us. So as you are interested, thank you for using the links included in the show notes, which will connect your learning path to me as a helpful source, and it's pretty much a win-win for all of us. That does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Michael and Daniel of the Sacred Honor Educational Fellowship. Michael Joseph, Daniel Mentz, welcome to Word Up. It's so nice to have you here. How are you guys?
Awesome. Great to see you. Great to see you again.
Yes, great to see you again. So Michael and I met at Confluence very briefly. We've rescheduled this podcast a couple times. I'm super excited that we were able to work it out for today. I know you're both here from Sacred Honor Educational Fellowship, and I would love to know what that is, why you created it, why my audience and myself need to know about it.
Sure, great. Well, one, thanks for having us. We love talking about this, obviously, and I'm glad that you're taking an interest in it. Obviously, you've leaned into this, so you have a deep curiosity, and you're wanting to share this with more of your folks. So, today we're gonna kind of talk about how we found our way here. You know, kind of go into what we like to call breaking the spell, which is sharing with people kind of what we're feeling and how we got into the space of how we feel this way, and like what's really going on in that way. And then ways that you guys could find your way out of it or through it or navigate it with a lot more power. So that's kind of, we come from the world of self-governance. So you might hear a lot of people talk about sovereignty, and that's a big language in this particular community. And we don't really necessarily come from that language, even though that's really true. Mm-hmm. We talk about self-governance because it's about self-responsibility. So we found ourselves in a place in society and in pretty much all ways where we've given our power to something else outside of us. Let something else govern us. Let something else tell us what to do. Give away our agency to some other agency outside of us, right? And that, and in our perspective, that's not natural. That's not what we came here for. And so there's, we get into the realm of natural law and divine nature, divine jurisdiction, right? So that we built the Sacred Honor Educational Fellowship on the premise of self-governance. So we can step into the constitutional aspect, which we call the original organic constitution. That was the first constitution drafted for the United States of America, the Republic, which is different than the United States Corporation, which we'll talk about. And within that, the purpose of that draft or that trust was to limit the legislative powers of government so people could self-govern. So there's a difference between government and governance, right? Government is a control mechanism. Governance is self-empowerment. So,
Interesting.
yeah, so that's kind of where we come from. Daniel, I don't know if you want to add some thoughts into that.
Yeah, sure. And the reason we've ended up here in this space collectively as a species, because this what we're talking about here today, it applies to every single government on the planet. We're not, special in any way, shape, or form. But the reason that happened was something that you often talk about, Danny, is dialectics and mind control and the usage of words to confuse and to control and to divide, really, is what we're exposed to, and division of the mind too, because someone who's double-minded doesn't know what's up or right or what their rights are and so forth. So that's really where I start, when we talk about the national status correction, we talk about dialectics from the get-go, and maybe we'll get into that later on. But really, it's the usage of language really that has confused our species to such a degree that we're just, in many ways, dependent upon a system that doesn't have the best interest in mind for all of us. And so that's why we call it breaking the spell, because most of humanity really is, unfortunately, under a spell. And so the edumentary that Michael was referencing, that is available to complementary members, really breaks down in detail all these stories that we've been told and we've been fed, that we need a power outside of us to, govern our species and govern us collectively, when in fact that's not true. Our species has been really lived without government before that even was an idea. So that's all it is. It's an idea that unfortunately is very toxic.
I completely agree, Daniel, and I'm curious because this is something that my podcast partner Emily and I, we do a different podcast, but we've been going over for years, which is, personally, I agree. Government is offensive. I am my own internal authority. But what do we do about the fact that we live in what is essentially a one-room schoolhouse? And if COVID showed us anything, it's how many people love their enslavement, love to be told what to do. So, Daniel, are you speaking into a vision of the future wherein we have no government, or are you guys speaking specifically to like those of us with eyes to see, those of us who want to take responsibility can start navigating through the system a little bit differently?
Well, it's both and. So, eventually I do foresee a vision for our species where we don't need government in the traditional sense that we've been growing up in. That's why we always harp on the word self-governance, because that's really not too long ago, really. I mean, pre-Civil War America, especially every individual was self-governing, right? There were no statutes, no codes, no regulations for the individual man or woman in America. Everyone was sort of self-governing, doing their own thing. Most of the statutes and codes and regulations, they apply to commerce, right? Or international trade, what goes in and out the country. And certainly also corporations, right? That had been incorporated at the time. But for the individual man or woman, there was nothing. There was no income tax. There was no regulations for what they do personally as a trade, or a craft, whatever. So that's really not too far away where we used to live a lot more in harmony with natural law. And so it's not really going to take us that much to go back to it. Unfortunately, you know, the biggest part of this is to undo the mind control that everyone's been exposed to. So I see us now, and we collectively agree in the fellowship, sort of building a bridgeway out of Babylon, as we used to call it. But it's a bridgeway from the old and into the new, where we start out with creating our own intentional communities. You know, that's a big movement right now. But the governance models, of how we interact with each other in these communities, there's so many new ideas now coming forth on how we live sort of, you know, as a community together. That's really exciting. Kind of like what, you know, Bitcoin and crypto is doing to the financial system, we're doing now with law and intentional communities, and self-governance. So think of it that way. You know, it's a new kind of technology, if you will, a new idea on how to move ourselves back into harmony with nature, really is what it's all about.
So I'd love to answer your question a little more esoterically. So the way I see it, I think the way that a lot of us are seeing it, because I've been tracking law and tracking what's been going on in the control measures and the globalist agenda orientations conspiratorially for about 30 years. And what I'm seeing today, I have never seen before in my lifetime and in my awareness, observation of this, is that there's more people aware and more people interested and more resources and potentiality for people to lean into learning this and putting it into practice and changing their lives. And by essence, it changes, you know, the lineage. It changes your seventh generation potentiality, and it changes the effect of how we come together in community. So on the esoteric side of it, if we want to talk about the quantum measure, when we have a group of people that have a certain energetic element about them that has that has a higher frequency element to it, then it'll overpower even a larger group of people that might not have any intention about where they are, what they're doing. Something else is of agency for them, right? So I think that's a big part of what's happening too. We've got more people waking up and more people leaning in and curious, and it's affecting the quantum measure of things. We have so many people that are coming on board and curious, and I think that's amazing. I'm excited about where we are right now.
Yeah, it's a great time for you guys to be taking this out into the world. I first clued into, now back in the day, we called it sovereign law around 2007. And I was doing a lot of ayahuasca in Los Angeles. And one of the curanderos I was working with was really hardcore on the law stuff of like, you guys have to get in integrity and not be paying into a crooked system. So that's when I took my first classes at the old Manson Ranch. And at that time, it was really expensive to learn this stuff. People were really, you know, safeguarding what they knew. I think, you know, after this, you know, I did like three classes and then it was like $25,000 to learn the rest. And these days we're so blessed, you know, that people like you are making these programs available for the layman like me. Here's the issue I come up against. I think law is super boring. And I recognize that I would be wise to learn this because I understand how it's like a cage around humanity on some level. But every time I dive in, I feel like, why am I learning my way around a system that's fake and demonic so that I can use its fake demonic languaging to not be affected by it? Like, I tend to get a little mind fucked around it because it's boring and I don't care. And there are 9 trillion other things I'd rather be doing with my time than learning UCC codes.
Well, I can relate to that. I really can. I ran away from law for so long, and then I realized that it's easier than I thought it was. So let me explain what I mean by that. So law can be as complex as you want. When you get into the legal system, which is the corporate state, the United States Federal Corporation, which we'll get into eventually on this chat. Those are man-made statutes and codes, and they're endlessly, phenomenally complicated and convoluted. But that's not what has the authority over us as the natural living men and women. We actually are the currency and the power over that when you actually get it, right? And you don't have to learn, you don't have to study 10 years of law in order to apply it. So what we have done, and only by the blessing of the teachers before us that really put their ass on the line. They're the real heroes, in my opinion. I'm standing on the shoulders of all of them. They're the ones who figured this shit out and moved it forward, and we've just distilled it down. So in the fellowship, we've just taken it and all that more complex nature of things, and we've distilled it down into simple language and practical, usable use. So you're not stuck in the paralysis of analysis. You can apply it while you're still learning. Everything in life is always about learning. You start a new job, you're constantly learning. It's like starting a new job. You learn. Yet it's very powerful. And then once you get it, once you wrap your mind around it, then you teach your children, or you teach your community, or you teach your grandchildren, you build your legacy. And then we don't have to keep learning this the hard way, like our legacy teachers had to go through. It's going to be natural for us. Mm-hmm. And then that system that's trying to bestow its power or presume power over us won't have power any longer. It's going to shrink down into this minuscule little thing that it was originally. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I hope that helped a little bit of for your question.
Yeah. And I'd like to add something too, is that, you know, the even though the system, as you describe it, yes, it is satanic, it's demonic, it's whatever it is, but it also honors natural law. How do we know that? Well, because they put natural law into the law books. Yeah, they give it different names, right, to make it confusing. But at the end of the day, when you know when you know how to read, as we say in the equity passage, when you see with equity eyes, then everything starts to make a lot more sense. Because all they did, again, I go back to dialectics, they gave the natural things new legalese labels. Mm-hmm. Right, and then hit them in their statutes and codes among all the other junk.
Right.
So that's really what it is, right? Where we, as Michael said, the teachers and the mentors that have come before us, they looked for those natural law needles in the haystack, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And then pulled them out and said, okay, here's one piece and here's another piece. And it's really a grand masterpiece, is really what it is, a puzzle piece. And so this is basically what we've done. We've distilled it, as Michael mentioned, into a very easy step-by-step process that anyone can follow along and see the puzzle pieces come together. Because that's really what it is, you know, because they have to honor natural law within their own system. Otherwise, it would have collapsed a long time ago, because everything is based on our consent, right? Mm-hmm. We often say is that we are the energy, we are the currency of the system, because we give it, we animate it. Right, we sign credit card applications, we open bank accounts, blah blah blah. We have social security numbers, you know the drill. So we're the ones animating it, and so the system knows that without us animating it unconsciously, it's going to keep growing and bloating and, you know, turn into the beast that it is today. But when we shift our consciousness and saying, okay, wait a minute. Okay, I know there's this one part of the system, but there's also this hidden side, right? Behind the man behind the curtain, so to speak. Let me look behind the curtain and see, oh, here's all the natural law stuff. And here's how they baked it and layered it into their statutes and codes. And they actually tell us how to use it most of the time, right? And that's the kicker. So law actually becomes fun when you know how to look into it, when you know how to apply it and claim it.
I appreciate that perspective, fun being one of my core values. Do you have to be someone who feeds off of conflict to take this path? We have to expect to go to court and be playing in those constructs to be self-governing?
Good question.
That's just such a great question. We actually get this quite a bit, because there's a lot of people out there, a lot of teachers that wherever they are in their life journey and their spiritual journey, they love conflict.
Right.
They want to argue. They want to fight. They want to be right. They want to prove the system wrong, and they want to punish the system. And those are usually the people that find themselves in a lot of conflict and a lot of controversy and a lot of trouble. And they bring everyone else along with them, because that's just where they are. Okay. So where we are is, we're not into controversy. We're peaceable. We come from a peaceable standpoint, because we get, when you know who you are, when you realize the divine nature of what we are, and that we are actually the sovereign power over that system, as Daniel said, we animate that system. When you really get what that means, you don't argue with that. You don't have to be in conflict with something that is inferior to you. You are to hold it up into its highest, not try to bring it down, right? So it's a different mindset, and we really speak from our hearts and not speak so much from our minds. So it's more of a divine nature of how we host our host the heart of the fellowship, how we educate, how we orient to our fellows. And it's effective. It's very effective. It actually creates a really good, peaceful, loving, cohesive field within all of our fellows as well. And it's interesting because it naturally keeps out the people that want to be in controversy.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be in controversy to have success with it. You don't need controversy. You don't have to argue. As a matter of fact, the way the system works is if you argue and you don't know who you are, if you argue as that corporate person, then you're looked upon as an incompetent.
Minor.
You're looked upon as a minor or somebody who's a belligerent, because they put laws into place like the Enemy of the State Act, right? So they put measures into place for the corporate person. If they're naturally by law enemies of the state. So if you argue with them, one, you're in controversy, you're not honorable, and you're looked upon as a belligerent, which is, it's something to look into and study. And we talk about that in the fellowship in a lot more detail. It's nothing you have to memorize. You just have to orient around what's there and why they put it in the place. And then when you get it, it's easy to go, oh, I'm not in controversy, I'm peaceable. So that's one of the first things that I do if I'm ever in an encounter with an agent from the state. One of the first things I say is, I'm peaceable. So I'm not being attached to the war powers, which is always enacted. Every time there's an emergency that goes on in the corporate state, then they can claim, they can bring forth the war powers, which means they can have dominant power over all corporate persons. I'm just speaking in simple language here so it doesn't confuse people. Believe it or not, that's actually true. That's actually how they wrote this into those particular laws. So that's one reason why they instituted using certificates and permits and things like this. When you're in an occupied country, if some people are real, you know, historians, they'll remember that when there's occupations, then you have to get permissions to move across different parts of those countries.
Right.
So that's what the permits are. They're permissions. That's what certificates are. They're permissions. That's what licenses are. They're permissions to allow us, so they can see what you're doing. You're giving them permission to oversight you so you can navigate across that occupied space. It's a trip, but that's how it really works.
Right.
All right, so a couple questions. When you say I'm peaceable, is that like a kind of lawful code for I'm not getting aggressive, don't treat me as though I am being belligerent? Like, is that legal code that's going to dispel any sort of aggression or conflict?
Well, I do that because it creates an energy field.
Okay.
And that's just my own practice. There isn't necessarily anything legal about it, yet it works.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a, how does Phil say it? A mind full of equity and a heart full of anger, then you'll find yourself in the conflict.
Yeah.
Right. So I do say it because it immediately sets the pace of whoever's trying to come at me. And they're like, okay, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah.
And then, I'm a big fan of picking your battles. I'm not somebody that tries to lingo myself through a circumstance with an officer. I use very simple things like the national status passport card. If I'm traveling privately in my private automobile or conveyance, I just give them the passport card and I don't get into an argument with them. And I don't try to convince them of anything. I just say I'm peaceable and I give them that identification because that's really all they're needing, they're wanting. That's just how I handle it. There's all different kinds of ways that people navigate those things, but that's just what we share with members.
Okay, let's stick with this for a moment. So you're traveling in your conveyance without an official, like, California state driver's license. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I don't use a license. No, I don't.
When you show an officer your passport card, is he like, cool, we're good to go, brother, have a nice day?
Not quite. I don't know if we've ever had that happen, Daniel. Has that ever happened? I
Well,
don't.
not directly when, when they just look at your cart. So they would have to run it, okay?
Okay.
And then they will see a do not detain code. So if you've properly followed the national status and passport process, then you will get a do not detain code on your passport. So both the book as well as the card. Where most people don't even know that there's a card that you can use to travel domestically, and you even can cross by land and sea to Canada, Mexico, and the Virgin Islands and a few other islands, right? So that takes away the real ID. You don't need a real ID. You can just use your passport. Okay. Now, as far as the driver's license goes, yes, it is a license. In fact, the word license comes from having permission to do an illegal activity. Right. So, and in the beginning, the way back in the 1920s or even 1910s, driver's licenses, when they were first introduced, they were voluntary for the regular people. They were only mandatory for commercial drivers because, yeah, you have to have, if you're transporting hazardous material, of course, you need certain training, right? That's understandable. But they saw an opportunity. Oh, let's make this mandatory. Again, mandatory just means it's a suggestion. Okay. So that's what we mean by a lot of these legalese terms. When you look at them, when you actually look at the legal thesauruses and you look at Black's Law Dictionary, you see the real meaning of them. And then it's like, what, a mandate is just a suggestion, right? But anyway, getting off topic here. So, for example, we've had one guy in the fellowship. He's a national status and passport member, and he was pulled over 5 times in 1 year. He always gave the cop the national status passport card, and each single time he was let go. And we have many videos proving that, because this is some of the, I do want to talk about the controversy in this space, particularly in the status correction world, because there's many teachers, there's many different guys and girls, and many different groups that teach different things as far as status correction goes. But this particular process that we're practicing was started basically in 2007. So in many ways, this is the original one, and everything else came after that. And everything we teach in the fellowship, not just the national status, but even for the equity passage, for the trifecta, and even for the allodial land, everything is verifiable. You can go and look at everything that we show you for yourself. So you see the puzzle pieces yourself. Okay. So the national status, really, to keep it super simple, is the pre-Civil War state citizen. It's not called state national. It's not called an American national. And it's not called an American state national. Those terms don't exist, unfortunately. I hate to break it to you, but because a lot of people I know that are already involved in the space, they will vehemently defend the state national, the American national. But at the end of the day, there's no definition for it. There is a definition for the national. It's in the Immigration Nationality Act. It's in the U.S. Code. It's on the the State Department website. It's even on the passport application. So there's that little piece that I mentioned earlier. That's the natural law piece that had to be baked into the system for people to claim, but they made it very confusing. So once you see that, oh, there it is. Okay, so I just have to claim that position, and then the system's going to honor it and give you a do not detain code on your passports in return. Why? Because as a pre-Civil War state citizen, you were basically under common law. You were under the original organic constitution, right? There was no statutes and codes and regulations for travel. Certainly, there were no driver's licenses. You were free to travel across state lines as you pleased, and you didn't have to have a license for it, right? So that's why they put a do not detain code on the passports, because a law officer, they're not going to show the law officer that, hey, they figured out the scam, leave them alone. They're just going to give them some kind of statutory code, a do not detain code in this case, for them to leave us alone. Because if we run a red light or we run a stop sign or whatever, there was no injured party. We didn't hurt or damage anything, right? That's common law. If there is no injured party, there is no crime. And it's really as simple as that.
So I wanted this. I was just kind of chuckling to myself that I think we've just given your listeners a big tease. I think we should digress a little bit and build a picture now that we've kind of hit some topics. So we're talking about the foundation for self-governance. We're talking about pathways, and we haven't even introduced the pathways at this point, even breaking the spell. So I just wanted to share. In just a little while, we're going to talk about a way that you can enter the fellowship complimentary, And you can watch an edumentary that we put together that covers a lot of the things that we're going to share today, at least the first part of it, with historical truths, historical facts, things that you can dissect yourself, just like Daniel was saying. We want you to do your own homework so you can see it for yourself. Please don't take our word for it. Do your own homework. We just lay it out for you, and it's easy to track and easy to follow. And you don't have to memorize these things. You just have to kind of get them, orient yourself, and then it's just I don't know how else to say it, but go through it, and it makes a whole lot of sense, and it changes your lens of life. So what we have in the fellowship, we've created what's called the Foundation for Self-Governance, and we have pathways to help people learn how to self-govern, how to move away from that corporate structure. If you want to, and we're going to explain what that is in a minute, where you can really build true legacy wealth in your life, where you're not bleeding it away or eking it away through taxation or eking it away through fines and fees or confiscations by this corporate state who presumes authority over your private property. Like, that's not freedom. So we help you orient to what freedom really looks like again as somebody that has authoritative power. Right, and it's called self-governance. And if you give away your self-governance, then you deserve to have all your stuff taken away, right? Isn't that just a slap in the face? But that's kind of what's happening. So we're just like rattling you a little bit here to get you to realize that you can do it differently. The way that you've been told all your life, you don't have to do it that way. You can, it's a choice, but you don't have to. So I want to kick back. Daniel, do you want to say something, Danny, really quick?
I just have a quick question around, you said we don't have to memorize anything. So, you know, I please correct me if I'm misunderstanding this. But the way that I had understood it until now is like if I get into a conversation with law enforcement or I end up going to court or I'm talking to the IRS, I have to know all the language. I have to know all my P's and Q's because if I get even one word wrong, like if I say, yes, it's my car, not my conveyance, or something like that, then I'm like trapped. And maybe this is just a story I've created, which is making it that much harder on myself, but what's the truth of the matter?
I used to think that way as well along my journey. And the deeper truth of it is, and when I say you don't need to memorize anything, you need to embody it. There's a huge, huge difference. Our whole system has so indoctrinated into memorization, and we've gotten out of the intelligence of the heart and knowingness. And so when I'm saying, when you go through some of the pathways, it's not about memorizing things. It's not about what's the key word I need to use when I'm standing in front of somebody, or what's the key word I need to say in front of the court. It's not that way whatsoever. As a matter of fact, if it's not frequent, but if you ever end up in court for some reason, we don't ever bring a stitch of paperwork with us. It's just knowing the position that you're in. And knowing that you're there to manage a commercial matter, and there's only a few simple things that you need to bring forward. And
And
it's
are those,
actually rather simple.
oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No problem.
Are those simple things what we learn by going through your four pathways?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Daniel, you're great at articulating this as well. If you, because I this is such a great question. I really appreciate you. What are your thoughts on it, Daniel?
So we to allay some fears, because a lot of people that come into the space as newbies, so to speak, you know, they want the templates, they want the step by steps, they want the charts and the, you know, the documents and whatever. And we have all that. You know, we do have templates and we do have scripts for certain situations. And like, you know, Michael said, it is rare if you do things right and if you do things in the private that you have to go to court. However, you know, sometimes people get ensnared so deeply with the system and they come to us with, you know, as we like to say, with
They're
their
on fire.
hair on fire, looking for water. And so, yeah, there's a lot more work to be done in those cases. But if you have a clean slate and you come into this, it's going to be rather easy. But all that to say is, if you are in a more difficult situation, you have to go and face a judge or whatever. We have a team that's ready to assist you with that, you know, because every situation is a little bit different. There are pathways and assistance available for you in the fellowship that can navigate you and guide you and counsel you basically through these sticky situations. So you're never going to be alone. You're never going to have to be memorizing a bunch of things. Everything has a remedy, as we like to say. And so each situation is a little bit different, and each situation may be has a different remedy. So all these pathos that we have, they're tools. Imagine like they're toolboxes, okay? So depending on what you're currently dealing with, you may want to use the equity toolbox, or you may want to use the national status toolbox, right? So each situation is different, but for all of it, there's a remedy. And that's really what we focus on.
Okay, one more question, and then we can go back to where you were leading us, Michael. Is I've noticed since what I call FOVID hit, I've noticed like a huge proliferation of all these lawful programs. And I think it's great. Like, I love that people are sharing this.
I do too.
At
Yeah.
Confluence a couple years ago, law was pretty much the basic theme. So there were a lot of people there who were doing it. And when I asked them privately questions about specific things, what I realized was a lot of it was theoretical, but it wasn't actually experiential. And it feels like the stakes are pretty high to be inviting people to like change up their status or challenge the IRS without any actual experience in the field. So are you guys teaching from the experience of living these various pathways and remedies?
Oh. Absolutely. Yeah. So just real quick. So for example, the national status, like I said, has been practiced in 2007. Equity passage, equity jurisprudence is it's even in the Constitution. So equity is one of the longest standing law forms of our species. It even predates common law. So it has lots of standing. The trust law is, huge, and very long standing too.
Very
Allodial
recognized.
land, right? The land patents, that's pre-constitution, that's pre United States of America, Republic. So all of it, and we're very aware that there's these many different teachers and processes, but anything and everything that we bring into the fellowship has been tested and proven for a long time by ourselves and as well as many others before us.
Cool. I love knowing that. And I'm sure you're going to speak to this, Michael, but I just want to kind of like fess up. I've been like, I grew up in Los Angeles. So I think if you grew up in Los Angeles, I'll just speak for myself. We don't really like cops. They're like super corrupt, super racist. And so I was brought up with very much of like a fear and a kind of constriction whenever I see cops. And I know that that limits me because when I'm dealing with authorities or matrix or bureaucracy, I just want to be left alone. So does this type of knowledge allow me to like get on top of those relationships and come at them with like more confidence and allow me to ground myself in my agency instead of just wanting to avoid?
100%. So what we share is not about avoiding it at all. It's about standing in it with all of your power. Because a lot of people are taught how to hide and how to hack and avoid or whatever. And we're not about that at all. We're just about standing in the highest truth. So we're all about being left alone. 100%. If you want the controversy, sure bet you're going to find it. It's not hard to find controversy if you want to be in it. If you don't want the controversy, then you'll also find your way into a place where you won't have controversy. So, the basic principle of how we function in the foundation for self-governance is that you establish your life, you're building your life in the private ledger, which we haven't even gotten into that. So, we'll talk about the private and the public ledger here in a bit. So, as you're building your life in the private ledger, you may have some ensnarements or encumbrances in with the corporate state, and there's remedies to be able to manage those in the most effective ways while you're building your life in the private. So you might have to lean into some of those things, and sometimes they can be a little bit unnerving because you just have to face them and deal with them, but that's life. So let's you lean into those, you settle and close those matters, and then you come safely back into the private. And eventually you are left alone. You find yourself into a place where you're very seldom ever needing to lean in or deal with anything that you might have to express equity or any kind of remedy with. You're really left alone, but you need to just stay on top of your affairs. It's just learning how to navigate your life in the private realm. It doesn't mean that everything is easy all of a sudden. I mean, I don't know life to be easy. Life is life. Whether you're navigating the public or the private, my orientation is around doing what is natural and doing what is free. So dealing in the public realm is also very challenging, but you're also giving up a lot. You're giving up a lot of your money, your energy, and you're really not building wealth very well, and you have all these restrictions. I'd rather just live life in the private where I'm in community, I'm still growing my property, growing my community, and I'm still growing my wealth in a myriad of different ways. I'm just not leaking it away, right? So, you still have to manage your life. I think some people get confused. They think, oh, I'm in the private now. I don't have to do anything. Like, no. When life is never about doing nothing, it's about activating and doing things and creating. We're creators, right?
So I'm curious, and I know you're taking us somewhere, but I'm assuming, Daniel and Michael, that both of you are operating in the private at this point. How
Yeah.
does that change like the quality of your life, like bird's eye view, macro? What's different now that you've gotten out of the whole like commercial public realm?
Well, that's a great question. So just to be honest with you, I'm not out of the commercial realm. If I want to lean into it in some way, then I lean into it in some fashion, but I know exactly what I'm doing. And I do it with a lot more power and awareness. I just know how to build things back into the private where I'm not losing my wealth. I'm protecting it. I'm safeguarding it so I can do what I want with it, which is different than if you're into the public. So my life has actually been enhanced by how I lead my life now. It hasn't been diminished. I'm not hiding. I'm actually more confident and more empowered now than I ever have been in my life. And I've gone through a lot of experiences. I've had a lot of businesses. I've done a lot of jockeying. I've done a lot of hiding from the system. And I'm not in that place anymore. I feel so grounded and centered and empowered, way beyond anything I've ever felt in my life before. So there's a rich benefit for learning this and leaning into it. It builds a lot of strength and confidence. But in regards to, do I have a bank account? Yeah, sure. I mean, personally, I don't, but through trust, absolutely. I navigate all kinds of different financial affairs. I still have vehicles, but vehicles are inside the trusts, and some of them have plates through the trust. Some of them have Cherokee Nation. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things I'm in practice of, right? But I'm also a very unique being. I now don't use a driver's license. I did for many years. I just finally gave it back to him because I was at that point where I was ready to do it. So you do it when you're ready. Again, pick your battles. You build the level of confidence and awareness, and you manage your life or self-govern your life the way you want to as you're ready for it. Like Daniel was saying, we call it building the bridgeway out of Babylon. So you're building it. Doesn't mean that it's built already and you're jumping across it. You're building it. You're learning. You're growing. So no, my life has gotten way better, but it hasn't changed. I still fly around the world. I still use a passport, but it's a national passport. I still have cars. I still have a house. I still have bank accounts. I still navigate life the same way. I just do it with a lot more power and confidence. And I feel great.
Yeah. And peace of mind is a big part too. Just, to top it off, it's peace of mind because you're just being left alone for the most part. And if something comes at you, you know how to handle it with confidence. So that's, this whole 9,000, 10,000-pound gorilla of government just goes off, gets off your shoulder. I mean, that's peace of mind.
It feels a little bit like the Wizard of Oz, like you guys are pulling back the curtain and it's like, oh, I don't have to
Yeah.
be afraid of this thing. I just want
Exactly.
to say before you take us to the next point, that I really appreciate this approach because I think I've been very intimidated by all the different law courses because the ones that I've taken, it's pretty like hardcore and you need to do this or you're a pussy or you're part of the problem. And so I appreciate the like more gentle take it at your own pace because I think that's part of why like I'll dive into it and then I'll pull out. And it's like, I think I've had the idea unless I'm fully in, what's the point? So I like the idea that I can like eke my way towards, changing my status, getting rid of the plates, and it's not necessarily like an all or nothing, do or die right this very second.
Yeah, we have a lot
Absolutely.
of members that are they're taking their time going through it. We actually have a lot of members that jump in head first and like they're so amazing. We have a lot of members that are timid and they learn in their own slow pace, but they're still doing things. They build a trust, they learn, they slowly migrate things into the trust, they buy a property and they might get a love letter from the IRS, so they decide to express equity, and maybe they do that over a period of a couple of years, whatever it is, they find their way. But so that's part of what we do in the fellowship is we are in fellowship together. So we have lots of live calls within the fellowship member pathways and overarching, like at what we call active members can come in, join open calls, Q&As to all the directors. We come together on calls, and each pathway has its own call. And we have lots of support, lots of chat groups that are just individualized. And people come in at whatever stage they're in, and they just keep learning. And sometimes people do dip out for 5 or 6 months, and then they come back in and they pick up their pieces because life is life.
I appreciate the idea of a fellowship. That's definitely very attractive to me because I've been in a few different of the lawful Telegram groups, and me, like beginner phase, like I'll ask a question and everyone's just annoyed that I'm not doing my own work and I'm not figuring it out myself. And I've noticed like a pretty like I haven't experienced fellowship in those groups because it feels like people are very much protective of the knowledge that they've acquired and maybe aren't as eager to give it away as, you know, I've hoped when I've had some questions. So I like the idea of a supportive fellowship, which I'm assuming is what you guys are cultivating.
100%.
We kind of have just the opposite. The people when somebody comes in, they have questions, they usually get way more support than they need.
Right.
But
Yeah.
that that's just true.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is kind of like this is one of my favorite t-shirts, you know, Revolution Without Healing is a recipe for disaster, because it's really true, you know, and what we're doing is revolutionary. I mean, these lawful remedies have been with us for hundreds, if not thousands of years, but we're using them now very consciously at exactly the right at the 11th hour with everything that we have to face, right, with the globalists and whatever. So, it's part of our collective healing journey. Is that we are healing our relationship with law, right? And part of the mind control is that, oh, law is too confusing, don't worry about it, you know, just hire an attorney and you're good. Well, that's, you know, that's part of the psyop, unfortunately. When in fact, you know, before the Civil War, common law was taught in elementary school because it was simple, right? They taught the people of this nation how law actually works, the common law actually works, right? So now, and then after the Civil War and the whole restructuring and everything, then the corporate overlay came in, and now we have what we have today, right? This monster. But it's when we come together in fellowship and we answer the questions that you have as a beginner, which I used to have, when I wish I had a fellowship, right? And in the beginning of my journey, because I had so many questions. And so finding that we hear this all the time as feedback from our members. Oh, this is so refreshing. This is so much easier than I thought it would be. And we have members that are just, they've been with us since the beginning. They saw the evolution of what we've built and continue to build. So it's really a place with a lot of heart, from the heart, for the heart, and really to have a place, a safe space where we can heal our relationship with law. So I like to say.
I really like that framing. I love that. All right, so walk us through the pathways. Walk us through how we utilize all the resources that you guys have put together for us.
Great. First, I want to talk about what we don't talk about in the fellowship.
Okay.
So, and I say this preemptively, saying that it's important to learn these things, but we don't talk about them. So, what we don't talk about are some of the richer, deeper conspiratorial elements when we're talking about the Committee of 300 and the Anunnaki and the bloodlines and the Vatican and the London financial system and the, you know, Washington DC military force. I mean, all that stuff is valid and it's worthy of looking into. It's just not where we come from. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of smart people that have dissected that very, very well. And I think you should learn that as well. So where we come from, as we've distilled it down into how the globalist system has created a control measure. Now, there's still psyops and mind controls and all that shit that still goes on. That's very, very valid. So you can't undermine that at all. But what we do is we distill it down into commerce and contracts. So we break it down into that because it's an easier thing for people to wrap their mind around. And it doesn't necessarily orient around all these conspiratorial elements. It's actually just law. Like Daniel was saying, we want to help you have a new relationship with law. And we distill it down in the simplicity of commerce and contracts. So let me give you an example. So you've heard us talk about the original organic constitution. We say that because there's more than one. So the original constitution, which took place after the revolution from the Declaration of Independence, and all of that came forward. And that beautiful doctrine, that trust, was developed with the basic principles of the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights, which are really beautiful. And it's not limited to the Bill of Rights, but basically it's expressing what is natural, that we as natural, sentient, divine beings have these natural, what we call inalienable rights to live and function and flow, so long as we're not impeding upon somebody else's same exact natural rights. Quite simple. That's where we were born equal, right?
Let me ask a question. So
Yeah,
at
yeah.
this stage of the game, because I've heard different stories, and obviously I wasn't alive in this body back then, that like the
Right.
Declaration of Independence and the founding of this nation was always like a Templar psyop, and it was never the freedom that it was meant to be. From your research and what you're sharing, is that true, or was this nation founded upon like idealistic principles that really wanted to support us in pursuing life, liberty, and all the other stuff?
In my opinion and in my research, based on my research and study going back to the Puritans and the Puritans that went to Holland and became the pilgrims, and the pilgrims are the ones that forged their way to the New World and brought their values and their principles, and they're the ones that actually created the Constitution. So that's a very quick overview, by the way. So this is just everything that I see. I'm familiar with some of the things you're talking about, but with the way that I see it, from everything I'm seeing, that it was built based on divine principles to express yourself in a protective fashion, where we're not encumbered and need to give something away to somebody else outside of us. It's completely laid out that way. Now, it didn't last long, truthfully. The moment that it was being developed, it was already trying to be dismantled. And what's so it, there's a lot of history here, and I try not to go too deep down the rabbit hole because we could just talk for days. But if you want to get into the history of the Jesuits, there was a period of time before the Constitution was ratified, and 30 years or so, 40 years after, somewhere in there, where the Jesuit order had been dismantled. It was still being propped up by one of the kings privately, but there was a pope that actually dismantled the Jesuit order. And the Jesuit order was the ones that was to take down the gosh, what is that called? The Protestant, what is that called? The revolution, or the
Reclamation, Reformation.
Reformation. Thank you very much. Yeah, so the Jesuits were put in activation. They were created to take down that particular movement that found its way to the United States. The Jesuits came here eventually and started dismantling parts of the United States. Anyway, during that, interestingly enough, during that like 40 or 50 year period where the Jesuits order was dismantled, the United States of America, the Republic, was created. And then it grew and started flourishing. And then the War of 1812 was all about banking and control. And then came the Civil War, was still all about financials and, controlling the nation.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with Michael and Daniel, as you are inspired to join us for the second half, which I strongly and fervently encourage you to do because it is so chock full of helpful information, actionable onward steps. You can find that on both my Patreon and Locals communities. So at dannycats.locals.com, as well as patreon.com/DannyKatz for as little as $5 a month. That is less than a single matcha latte with coconut milk. You will get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus those warm, fuzzy, health-boosting frequencies that come along with helping a woman like me in continuing to write books, to put out podcasts, to share content with you and me and the rest of our high vibe tribe. So choose whichever platform feels best to you, Locals, Patreon, or both, because abundance rocks. And join us there for the second half of this powerful conversation with Michael and Daniel. One last nudge to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, to like, share, and subscribe to this podcast, to leave me glowing 5-star reviews on all of the podcast apps, as well as on Amazon for all of my books, and to refer to the links in the show notes to sign up for the various offerings at Sacred Honor Educational Fellowship. All right, tribe, thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.